Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lisa Schwartz, one of the pharmacists on staff with NCPA. I'd like to welcome you to today's education webinar, Innovation for Pharmacy Growth. The speaker today is Jimmy Neal, the General Manager for Pharmacy Lending at Live Oak Bank. Formerly, he was the Vice President of Pharmacy Transition and Investment Strategy for the Retail Independent segment of a Fortune 20 drug distributor. Jimmy has worked with more than 1,000 pharmacies in various stages of ownership transition, from operation assessment, sales, mergers, acquisitions, financing, partnership buyouts, valuations, and tax mitigation strategies. Today's webinar is being recorded and will be provided on the NCPA website. When Jimmy finishes, we will take questions from the question and answer chat box in the corner of your screen. Note that your questions are visible only to Jimmy and me. And with that, I will turn it over.
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon, everyone. I appreciate you spending a half hour or so today with us. I'm going to talk a little bit about innovation and pharmacy growth and a little bit about outside-the-box thinking and what we're seeing in the marketplace today. Fortunately, I have the good favor of working with a lot of really good pharmacy owners and operators every day, a lot of consultants in the industry and people who innovate, who invent. And hopefully we'll talk today high level about that and ways to stay ahead of the curve. So by no means am I the know-it-all. I do own a few pharmacies with a partner, and we struggle like most pharmacy owners today to continue to generate the same margins and the same profits that we did last month, last year, two, 3 years ago. A lot of challenges out there. I don't need to tell any of you that. DIR fees, pressures on margins, reimbursements. But, you know, I'm always talking with folks, and the best operators will tell you that they don't focus on the negatives. There's not really a whole lot you can do receiving $4 for a Tylenol or a hydrochlorothiazide script, you know, from some third parties, or even less. So let's focus on other areas where we can innovate and drive revenues and reduce expenses and increase margins, because it is out there. As a bank that looks at pharmacy financials all day, I've got a team that does it. There are people who are doing some really different non-traditional things, and it's not that far outside of the box, and it's helping people, and they're making some money. So hopefully the objective of today's conversation will be for you guys to think a little bit about that. Bottom left-hand corner of your screen, you should see a chat area, and you can ask questions, and Lisa will queue those up for us, and I will try to answer those if it makes sense. So there we go. Trying to advance. There it is. You gotta click on it. So we'll probably talk about more than four ways to innovate for pharmacy growth. Some things that won't be on the slide that we'll chat about. So hopefully you'll walk away today with one or two areas. Why innovate? That's pretty easy. I think today you've got to reinvent yourself. Change or die. You've all heard that. If you continue just to fill scripts as they walk in the door and hope that you make money, hope's not a strategy. I didn't make that up, but I like to use it. I was with somebody who focuses on coaching pharmacists to make more money on scripts yesterday, and he said, look, you got to go where the money is. You've got to focus on scripts that make you more than $8 per script. How do you do that? Well, you know, hopefully you've got to find out which prescriptions those are. He does a lot of data mining. amongst his customers as a consultant and some of the pharmacies they own. And you find out which prescriptions you make more margin on. And you ask why and how. And you want to try to drive business that way. It's not real easy, but that's what they try to do. So to me, that is innovative. It's thinking outside the box. It's thinking about ways to drive more margin in your pharmacy while helping ultimately the customer and the patient. And ultimately, everybody stays healthy and make a little bit of money in pharmacy. So we'll talk about some of those opportunities. And with that comes investment. And you've all heard the saying that it takes money to make money. I think that's true with a lot of these initiatives. And some of you will have plenty of capital to invest in some ideas or initiatives, and some of you may need to borrow some money, so that's what we'll talk about at the end, getting a term loan or working capital loan to finance some of these ideas. It doesn't have to be $1 million. Some cases it might be, but some cases it may just be $50,000 to $100,000. There'll be plenty of time for questions throughout the presentation. Hopefully, you know, we'll look at them, and if it makes sense, I'll wait till the end. But if it makes sense during the presentation, I'll try to answer them. We're seeing a lot of consolidation in the industry, aren't we? Let's see. CVS acquired Target's pharmacies, so they have CVS to sign outside of every Target in America. At least the last half a dozen or so I've seen has CVS signs out. They're advertising it. CVS acquired Omnicare several months back. Walgreens and AmerisourceBergen have a relationship. I believe last I saw, Walgreens owned 24.9% of AmerisourceBergen. You see strategic relationships with maybe it was Walgreens and Prime Therapeutics. You see the Blues of the world, BCBSs, aligning with folks. And so you see it not only in the third party, but you see it in drug distribution. You see it in chain pharmacy. Why are they doing it? Well, it's because the margins are continuously under pressure, and we're all trying to do more with less, and we're trying to recoup those dollars, if you're a public company, to satisfy earnings per share for your shareholders. If you're a private company, you're trying to pay your bills, make payroll, pay your bank debt, make the same amount of money you made last time. So that's why I think you need to innovate. Think outside the box. Do something a little different. So, how do you do that? How do you start? Well, it's, I think a lot of times we get in a grind, or we get complacent, where we're walking into our office, we sit down, and we start answering emails. And the next thing we know, we look up, and it's been 3 hours. We walk into our pharmacy, do our morning routine, go to the queue, start filling scripts from the robot, solving problems, and next thing you know, it's lunchtime. And we haven't really stepped back or taken quiet time for ourselves to really put a plan or tactics on the table. And so I think it makes a lot of sense to prioritize a little bit of time every week to think of ways you can innovate. It may sound a little corny, but I think you need a little quiet time and go somewhere out of your norm. Go to a Starbucks, go to a diner, go to the park. I'm 48 years old. I like the smell of silly putty. I like to get different colors of silly putty, and you can squeeze it and touch it, and it's kind of, I guess it gets my artistic juices flowing. But it puts me in a state of mind where I can think a little differently. Think about ways to make more money on scripts or to market my pharmacy or our pharmacy a little differently. And maybe that's calling up a mentor or somebody you know in the industry who does a really good job in an area that's not competing with you. I think most of you are very good networkers and you know really good and successful pharmacies all over the country. And if you don't, now's a great time to start networking. NCPA conferences, wholesaler drug conferences, pharmacy development services, buying group conferences, these are great opportunities to network and or network with other people in your organizations. Who's doing some of these things that we're going to talk about in a few minutes really well? And then prioritize it. You know, how important is it to you to implement an appointment-based model, med synchronization? How important is it to you to explore that specialty opportunity or compounding or pain creams or ointments that you may not necessarily mix in a mortar and pestle or in your compounding lab, but comes in a box with an NDC and you can still make good margins. So put some of those priorities on paper and focus on them. It's tough sometimes. We get caught in complacency. So what have you thought about? Well, we've all heard about MTM. I'm not saying you're going to drive profits. Probably cost you more than it does to administer them. But the spirit of the program is medication adherence. It's getting Mrs. Smith to take her meds as prescribed and as directed. It's a hard thing to do. A lot of pharmacies have had success with MedSync or the appointment-based model. Our pharmacy has. We've got almost 500 people on it now. And the studies that show that your scripts increase 15 to 21%, I don't know the exact number, it's true. It really works. It's not for everyone, but for the majority of people that we have converted to med synchronization, it's working. And they are coming into the pharmacy less, but it's a better interaction with the pharmacist. And it appears to be working. Script counts are up. And it's also an opportunity to make sure that the multiple scripts that they are on, you can drive those to the most profitable scripts in class. So med synchronization. What else to consider? Well, is compounding really dead? People ask me all the time, hey, is it worth going after? I hear the third parties aren't reimbursing dollars. And I got to tell you that the compounding model has changed. There are a lot of pharmacies we look at, the financial statements, and we talk to operators every day that are doing a lot of cash. But we're also talking to some pharmacy owners and operators that are doing, they're still billing third parties. Now, it's typically not the products that you're mixing that where you're getting third-party reimbursements. They're typically the creams that are coming in a box with NDCs. And so those are some things you can explore. Innovative initiatives. Think about embracing some technology. Think about adherence packaging, not just blister packs or strip packaging, but innovative ways to deliver medicine different than your competitors. So it sounds kind of, a lot of pharmacies are popping up across the country, and they're using multiple medications and adherence-based packaging. Some of it's strip-based packaging. There's lots of companies out there that do it. and you put it in, you roll them up and you put them in a little dispensing box with your logo on it. Some people are charging a fee. Some people are not. We're seeing some of these models pop up across the country with retail fronts. So you'd think that traditionally strip packaging was for long-term care pharmacy. And when in reality, what you're seeing is that a lot of caregivers, a lot of people my age, taking care of 70-year-old moms and dads and uncles and aunts and friends, find it easier to help administer medications with strip packaging. And instead of going over to your aunt's on Saturday afternoon and putting all our meds in a 7-day pill box. So it's not just for long-term care. I think it's for everyone. Or maybe it's even blister packs or whatever kind of packaging is different than amber vials. Something to consider. That's innovation. And again, I think it's good for everyone. It's good for the patient. They take their medication on time and often, and your scripts stay up, and everybody wins. So what else are some of the folks doing that is different than your traditional pharmacy? Specialty, we've all been hearing about it. Some of you are probably in it today. Specialty has a wide definition. It's not just Hep C or HIV, but there are niches out there. And you're able to align with referral channels, certain disease state physicians, and establish yourself as an expert. You've got to have really dedicated staff and experts to help navigate prior authorizations and get authorized in networks with certain folks. And there are certainly rules and regs in states and cities about allowing you to do so. But we're seeing a lot of people have a lot of success in specialty. This is where it takes capital. This is where it takes money. And, it takes money to buy expensive meds. It takes money to add staff, customer service resources, people that are, two or three folks that are on the phone all day working with third parties in prior auths and doctors to get these things approved. And with the manufacturers, when that fails, to navigate the coupon or the rebate process so that the patient gets the specialty med and pharmacy gets paid. So we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of pretty innovative things. Recently saw a pharmacy strategically partner with a group of dermatologists in a city, and the manufacturers of certain derm products, and probably 30 to 40 different products, and all they're focusing on are the dermatologists. And again, coupons and rebates from the manufacturers, essentially allowing the patient very, very little copay or zero copay. Again, innovative, outside the box, but still focusing on delivering good personalized service and care. So whatever it is, whoever's doing those inventive or innovative things in pharmacy, other than, the historical filling blood pressure and cholesterol meds and an amber vial, they're doing it pretty well. They're focusing on that. So they're focusing on driving those scripts versus driving the scripts that you're not making as much money on. And that's what we're seeing in the marketplace. Starts with a plan, a lot of networking, meeting with a lot of doctors. You've got to get that referral channel to come your way. But we're seeing, from a bank's perspective, these great operators are driving that. There's a lot of great technology in the marketplace. There's a lot of great technology with some pharmacy management systems. I won't name any names, but you probably know the top three pharmacy management systems out there. And if you haven't looked at what's different with them today, I think it's probably time to do that. The way we're getting paid is different. We're trying to go to pay per performance, right? We don't want the third parties to get all the money for the great job that you're doing. Hopefully they'll pass along those rebates and bonuses from Medicare to us. That's yet to be seen in some cases. But it's still, that's where it's coming. It's pay for performance, having our customers and patients take their meds when they should. And I think technology can help with that. And technology is not just robotics. It starts with pharmacy management systems, too. And the interfaces that are there with your point of sale, the ability to communicate directly with your patients. You know, we tried 5 or 6 years ago to send text message alerts to our customers when the scripts were ready. And I don't think they were ready for it 5 or 6 years ago. But I would challenge you to rethink that today. My mom's even got a smartphone. I never thought she would have one, but she got a big old smartphone. And she texts as much as I do. And so I think that that there is an ability to relook at technology for reminding people that scripts are ready, or if you have a drive-through, they drive through, they drive around the building, and you text them when the scripts are ready. So there's a lot of things that technology can do to help remind people it's time to come pick up their medicine. And anything you can do to refocus your folks' time on taking care of the customer, that's exactly what we need to do. Maybe it is an investment in automation. Maybe it's an investment in packaging. Maybe it's a small investment in packaging. Maybe you're not quite ready to invest in a $200,000 strip packaging machine. So maybe you do some blister packs to your retail customer, or whatever packaging makes sense for you guys. Again, you're doing something a little different. You're innovating. You're doing something that the chains, for the most part, aren't doing. And I would just suggest that whatever you try, you may fail, and that's okay. I think you, in order to innovate, you've got to take some chances and some risk, whatever it is. But calculate your return on investment. The amount of time, amount of dollars that you invest, track it. And try to track the results if you can. It's not always really easy to do, but try to track your results. We recently invested in some medication. I actually invested in a new pharmacy management system because the one we've been using for about 14 years didn't have medication synchronization module to it. So we are converting to one that does have that ability. It's got the ability to help manage that process. Again, it's not necessarily always investing in robotic counting and filling, but maybe something to help with what we're all trying to do, which is raise our scores and our fill rates in certain categories. In order to get paid, in order to help keep the customer and our patient healthier. So take a look at what your current pharmacy management system may have to offer you. Maybe it is time to take a look somewhere else, because the way that we're practicing pharmacy changes every day and every year. I think it's also important to take another look at point of sale and workflow and how it interfaces with your pharmacy management system. And I know we got complacent, and a lot of pharmacies that are sold, the new owners come in and they do an analysis, and it's one of the things that they invest in early is new automation pharmacy management software and point of sale that talk to each other so they can practice pharmacy the way we're trying to practice today. Folks are coming to us and asking for money to invest, and there is some opportunity in long-term care. Maybe it's not all skilled nursing. Maybe it's Maybe it's focusing on board and care. Maybe it's focusing on corrections in the small markets. Maybe it's focusing on mental health. But they're carving out niches because of people they know and contacts in the community. And maybe it's hospice, and they're investing in that. Maybe it's a small investment in technology like EMR. Maybe you need different software or carts at assisted living or skilled nursing. But maybe time to revamp some of that. And you may not need to bring on 1,000 beds. It may make sense to bring on a few beds, a few hundred beds, to see if it makes sense for you and your community. Sometimes you can get too big and lose those economies, and we see that a lot of times. Just because somebody has a very large revenue doesn't mean they're making a lot of money. A lot of times you can get beyond the economies of scale. I tell you, I'm a big fan of telepharmacy as well. Telepharm is something I wasn't as familiar with 3 years ago. We've probably financed a dozen telepharmacies. It's not authorized in every state. Some states where it's not, there can be exceptions. But the software, Working Cap, enables some people to convert existing pharmacies into a telepharmacy and eliminate a pharmacist. Maybe not completely, but on many days of the week. And or establish telepharmacies in a town where it doesn't make sense to have a full-blown pharmacy because of the expense of a pharmacist there all day long. But you can put in a technician and a clerk and get by and still make some money and using technologies effectively and safely dispense medication. Something to look at. Telepharmacy. So people always say, hey, if I invest in automation, am I going to eliminate resources? And the answer typically that I hear and experience is no. You're probably not going to eliminate employees. But what you may do is reallocate their efforts, reallocate that labor to other things. For example, focusing on MTMs, focusing on medication synchronization, focusing on picking up the telephone and calling people to see how they're feeling. Dentists do this really well. Dentists are great at it. I was talking to a very successful pharmacy seller a few weeks back, and I was in the seller's pharmacy, and I was in there with a new buyer, and I asked a question. I said, this is great. You know everybody in here. Everybody that walked in the door, walked out, he greeted them by name. Been there a long time. Great memory. I said, what's your secret? He said, you know, we're just doing little things that other people aren't doing. Like, if we get a new customer or we get somebody who we know is really sick, we'll randomly pick up the phone and I'll have our technicians or a technician randomly call 15 people. How are you feeling? I know that you're in the pharmacy, you picked up your medication yesterday. Do you have any questions? Make sure you're feeling okay. We appreciate your business. They love that phone call. And that's just good old-fashioned pick up the phone customer service. Now, my dentist was really good at that. I have a root canal done. Get home that afternoon and call the house. My wife takes the call. Oh, the dentist just checking on you. Wow, that was pretty cool. Nothing really else they could do, but just calling to check on you. Powerful stuff. Is that innovative? I don't know. Been around a long time. A lot of people are probably doing it. But I think sometimes we get caught up in complacency and we forget to do maybe some little things that make a big difference in keeping the customers. It's tough to keep them. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to create stickiness So when open enrollment for Part D comes around each year, it makes it harder and harder for Mrs. Smith and Mr. Jones to switch if they're going to save what they think they're saving, a few hundred dollars in copays or less. Still may not be enough, but that's what we're trying to do. So take some time. Take that half an hour once a week or an hour or more often as you can and sit down and try to determine how you can innovate and do things a little differently. Because I think the results will surprise you. So take a look at that return on investment. Decrease wait times if there's a way for you to track that. Take note of alternative revenue streams. And it counts when you're synchronizing medications and your prescriptions go up. You can track that. You'll see your script count go up each week. I hope you're tracking your scripts. I hope you're tracking your margin. I was in a meeting last week. Someone asked me, Jimmy, what are the key performance indicators or metrics that you think are most important that people track? Well, to me, of course, we like to track prescription count. Daily, weekly, monthly, over prior periods. But more importantly, we like to track gross margin dollar per prescription. How much money are we making per prescription? And you can look at it off your pharmacy management system reports if you think that your acquisition cost or price updates are accurate and you think that that information is good. Add in your rebates, figure out how much your monthly rebate is divided by scripts, and maybe it averages $2 per script, and use that as a rule of thumb, and track what your margin is per script. And as you're implementing these new ideas and focusing on maybe specialty or focusing on more profitable brand scripts than generics, see if you're having success. See if that investment in extra resources or equipment pays off. It used to be, well, everything's about, you know, generics. We make more money on generics. We're making, my margin's 53%. True, but you really can't put percent in the bank. And so I like to challenge people to take a look at the medications that you're making the most money on. And is there a way to do more of that? Because it's not the hydrochlorothiazide, it's atenolol, metformin that you're really making huge margins on. And so maybe there's opportunities. Find out who the doctors are prescribing and try to think of innovative, inventive ways. Again, there's no magic bullets, but if you can try to focus your energy and efforts to think about it, I think you'll figure it out. And really like vaccinations and immunizations. You can go to the CDC's website. There's lots of information on the Google these days about it. And really, when you really think about it, there's a lot of opportunities outside of flu zone, outside of the flu shots. There's a lot of opportunity with Zostavax, pneumonia, the second pneumonia vaccination, and others in your pharmacy. And if you bill and code for it right, not only do you make money on the medication, but you're also making a fee dispensing immunization. And so a lot of people are really jumping on that bandwagon. Again, providing care in your pharmacy, you're not just delivering medications in an amber vial. You're helping people feel better and not get sick. It's a win-win. Okay, if you are going to purchase some automation or lease automation, which one's better? People ask that all the time. I don't know that it really matters a whole lot. If you lease it, you get to write off the entire lease payment every month as an operating expense. If your taxable income level is 40%, federal and state, then you're saving 40% against that. So if you're paying $1,000 a month, you're writing off $400 in tax savings. Really, your real cost is $600. At the end of the lease, with a capital lease, you can buy the automation for $1. Most automation companies will try to break even on the hardware over time. and you know they make their money on servicing and support. So I think leasing is a good way to go. Own, you could buy it outright. Again, that $200,000 investment. Today's tax law still says that you can depreciate that equipment using Section 179 today. You could depreciate the entire $200,000. And again, if you're at a 40% tax rate, then you're saving $80,000 in income taxes. So the real cost is not $200 to you. It's $120. In the long run, I think over time, it all evens out to be about the same. So I can't really tell you which one is good, which one is better. It depends on your situation. Leases may be easier to obtain than financing. It's really up to you to look at. Just several differences. They're both ways to finance equipment. So how much should I spend on automation? How much should I spend on innovation? Well, it really depends. What's your need? You know, do you have cash today? Or do you need to borrow some money? Whether you're investing in strip packaging, adherence-based packaging, whether you're investing in counting, whether you're investing in marketing expenses, maybe you want to hire a full-time marketer to go out and market in a certain disease state to drive your specialty business. Think about not only the investment, but what will be the ultimate out-of-pocket expense considering your income tax rate. And if you guys are scratching your heads thinking, what is he talking about, then reach out to your CPA or your accountant and talk to them about an investment in either capital equipment or additional resources or marketing campaign or a different type of packaging and find out what the true out-of-pocket cost will be considering your income tax ramifications. So you may need $50,000. You may need $1 million. Hep C meds, you know, can go up to $90,000 for a regimen. Rheumatoid arthritis, HIV, transplant, you name it. There's a lot of people who have established these referral channel partners, and they call us and say, hey, Jimmy, I've got 48 prescriptions for this medication, but they're $3,000 for a month supply each. I don't want to do this halfway. I want to go all in. How much money do I need? Think about that. Think about what your terms are with your wholesaler and think about how quickly you might get paid. You don't always get paid within 24 days on some of these specialty meds. Sometimes it takes twice as long because they're going to audit every claim over a certain dollar amount. Things to think about. Let's see. Question. Good time to break. Pharmacists been successful with dietary supplements? You know, I haven't seen a lot of success with dietary supplements or nutraceuticals. So there are some pharmacies that focus high-end nutraceuticals, vitamins, supplements. Some people believe in it, some people don't. You know, there's a lot of studies out there, and people argue both ways. If you have a healthy diet and don't abuse alcohol or drugs and you're relatively healthy, most doctors will argue that you don't need them. Some will argue that you really need them. But we haven't really seen any home runs. I haven't, in any case, seen any home runs. Now, there is a pharmacy that we recently financed in, let's call it New Mexico. Compounding pharmacy, as well as traditional. We're right across the street from a very large assisted living community, retirement homes, 55 and older, thousands of homes. and they thought they would capitalize on the maintenance med. Well, it just didn't happen. It wasn't as easy to do as they thought. But their front-end business, the nutraceuticals, the supplements, they're doing $40,000 a month. And those margins are about 40%. So to that sense, I think they've been pretty successful. It's a lot of education and I think a little bit of luck because some people are willing to spend money on supplements. So I think it just all depends. Hopefully that helped. So why do banks finance pharmacies? Pharmacies are still relatively a good investment. A lot of banks like the deposits that flow through each month. If you don't know anything about banking, banks use your deposits to leverage loans to buy money cheap so that they can loan money and make a spread. So if you buy, if it costs you 1% to borrow money from another bank or the Fed, and then you charge 6% interest, you make a 5% margin. There's lots of costs involved there. It's just a barn math example, but that's how they do it. So the more deposits they have, the more free money they get, the larger the spread is. Merchant services, Visa, MasterCard, every time there's a swipe, banks make money along with the merchant card folks. Pharmacists still make pretty good money. Average pharmacy owner makes $250 or more. And then they love to loan money to you for homes and commercial real estate and manage your money if you have any, sell you life insurance. That's why banks like to finance pharmacies. Still think there's about 20,000 plus or minus a few thousand pharmacies out there, your community pharmacies. NCPA will tell you 23,000. I use a lower number because I'm excluding all the regional chains that are 12 pharmacies or more, probably still community pharmacies. But when, you know, I consider it a community pharmacy, 10 stores or less. Still seeing several hundred pharmacies selling, closing down, transitioning ownership each year. You're still seeing them selling to the chains. Chain activity has slowed a bit. I think with the consolidations, with Walgreens and Rite Aid trying to merge, and I hear it's going to happen. Whispers in the street are that somebody's going to buy 900 pharmacies, a big chain, and somebody will buy another 600 from them. So you see some activity there, but it has slowed. Maybe it'll pick up again. But here's a chart, SBA loans. So these are the top industries by charge-off. So it means that if you're on the top, like a veterinarian, you've got the smallest charge-off percent. Let's see. She didn't sort this for me like I wanted her to. This is a new chart. So I guess funeral homes have the smallest charge-off percent at 0.02%. That's pretty fantastic. Pharmacies, 0.04%. So tied with hotels and motels. These are SBA guaranteed loans over a 5-year period. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good investment. Any of you who are considering financing and don't want to do any financing with our bank, take this stat to your local bank or big banks. Maybe they don't get it. They may not understand pharmacy like we do, but still relatively good risk out there. Types of loans you're going to get, lines of credit, a line of credit. Here's what I don't like about lines of credit. You get a line of credit for $100,000, $150,000, $3 million, whatever the number is. Lines of credit are typically due each year or every 2 years, which means if you borrow $100,000, they typically want you to try to pay that down all the way and then renew it once a year. Well, that's typically not how, you know, most business owners will use it. They get a line of credit for $100,000, they'll use $100,000 or $95,000, and that balance will stay there. And in 12 months, the bank says, well, need you to pay down your line of credit. Say, well, my receivables are still aged. This is pharmacy. This is not textile. So they don't really understand pharmacy. And then Bank B comes in and buys Bank A without a relationship for 30 years that the previous bank had with you, and they call your line of credit. And so it's due. So you get no more money, and you've got somebody calling you every day to pay your line of credit. We deal with that every day because we're refinancing those line of credits into term loans. So I'm not a huge fan of lines of credit. There's wholesaler financing, inventory buy-ins. Those are all examples of short-term financing. But, you know, the long-term stuff comes from conventional lenders and SBA-guaranteed lenders. So what's the difference? Our bank is an SBA-guaranteed lender. We loan our own money. It's not the government's money. But the government issues essentially an insurance policy. So you're going to pay a fee, 2.5% on average of the loan. That fee goes straight to the government, and the government keeps that fee to operate its SBA program and to pay out off the defaults. Pretty good insurance rate if you look at it. 0.04% actually get charged off. So the government's going to guarantee, in our case, for most cases, 75% of the loan. You're going to pay a premium. It goes to the government in case you default. And as such, we're able to do things that conventional lenders don't. We can finance pharmacies, refinance, acquisition startups, commercial real estate with less money down. And that can be anywhere from a few percent to full 25%. Sometimes that structure includes seller notes. We don't need collateral. However, if you have it, we are required to take it if you have 20% in real estate. So the SBA guaranteed financing that our bank does in pharmacy, because there's so much goodwill in a pharmacy purchase, which is an intangible asset, which means you can't really touch it, works really well for pharmacy. Conventional lending, so that's not a government guaranteed loan. You walk into a bank and you say, I'd like a loan for my pharmacy, non-government guaranteed, and they'll say, okay, well, we typically like at least 15% cash down. All right, check that box. Number two, we want one-to-one collateral, or we want 0.8-to-1 collateral. So if you want $1 million, we need $800,000 in collateral in real estate or liquid security. Well, most people who have liquid securities are going to liquidate and not borrow against it. So conventional loans in pharmacy are pretty tough. I would say that only about 5% of the loans out there are conventional. So most people are utilizing the SBA financing. So what are some different things to do innovating that you might need money for? Well, we already talked about specialty. Excuse me. So you might need some dollars to invest in software. You might need dollars to invest in a new location. Is location real important in specialty? Not like you would think in retail, but it might make sense to be in the same office complex or medical office building as those specialists who are referring scripts to you. So yes, maybe you do need a location over there, a different kind of relocation. File buys. The chains aren't the only ones that can buy files. Why can't you? I'll finance those all day long. Love to do it. You've got a competitor within a mile or two or three of your pharmacy, or if you're rural and 15 miles makes sense, and you can convince me or the bank that it makes sense for you to acquire those files, and that you have a seamless transition, and that you'll retain most of them, I will finance that all day long, 100%, if you have an existing pharmacy. The chain's payback period is about 16 months when they buy files, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer. They expect to retain 95% of every file buy. Some chains put pawbacks in there, but if they don't, then the sellers don't get all the money. But the chains, I know for sure, the chains expect 95% retention. And They've been doing it a long time, and a lot of them are really good at doing it. What about real estate? Well, Jimmy, what's really innovative about real estate? Well, how about investing in real estate that probably will appreciate on average high single digits, if not, 10% on average a year, depending on where you're at. It's an appreciating asset, and you're not throwing your money away to your landlord all the time. And so you're building wealth. You're building an asset. Well, that's great. I want to try to buy my building. Jimmy, I've been trying to buy this pharmacy building for years, but the seller just, the landlord, he doesn't want to sell. Well, that's probably because they're afraid of a taxable event. They don't want to have to pay capital gains taxes on a building that probably has a zero basis, which means they've depreciated the whole thing down to a zero basis according to IRS, which means they sell it for $300,000. You're going to pay capital gains taxes on $300,000. Today, that's 20% federal, 3% Obamacare surtax, and then your state taxes. That's probably close to 30%. Unless you do a 1031 exchange. And so the seller sells the building to you for $300,000. They identify another property within a certain time frame, and they invest the same amount or more money into a similar like-kind property. And maybe it's closer to where they've retired, or maybe it's a different type of commercial real estate project, a duplex or a commercial building. Now they have a different building. They haven't paid any income taxes, and now you're the owner of the pharmacy that they sold you. I think that if you explore a 1031 exchange with your tax attorney and or CPA and theirs, you might open up some light and some doors. If you own your own pharmacy today, and you are renting, and you want to buy out your landlord, most of the time, we can do 100% financing for 25 years. 25 years, 100% financing. Is it innovative? It's thinking outside of the box. It's thinking outside of the box because there's been an obstacle with your landlord that they don't want to pay taxes. And now you innovate with an IRS tax law, 1031 exchange, And now you're an owner.
Oh, how many do I have?
So that's really it. I've taken 53 minutes of your time. I appreciate it, and I hope you guys at least walk away with a few ideas today, or at least a process where you can start thinking about ways to reinvent or to innovate. Start researching a little bit. Reach out to somebody who's been really successful, somebody you know in another town or another state or a little different type of pharmacy. See if it makes sense for you to try to get creative and drive a different type of revenue stream or profit stream. And I really appreciate your time. Lisa, I'd like to thank you and the NCPA for facilitating this today.
Certainly. Thanks, Jimmy, for the presentation. At